This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott from 3050, and I'm here with Abby Bennington. How are you, Abby?
Good, thank you, Chris.
Abby's one of our WSET tutors here, and she also runs her own tastings called ABV Tasting, Alcohol by Volume Tastings, although I don't think it's actually by alcohol by volume.
Well, hope not.
Maybe not.
Maybe.
Okay, and what we're going to talk about today is some of the PDOs or the appellation rules or the different types of appellations you can get in Bordeaux. Let's start at the bottom of the heap rather than the top of the tree, so to speak. And at the bottom, you've got your AC Bordeaux. You don't really get any table wine, do we? We don't get any IGP wines or
IGT. No, it's just the generic Bordeaux AC, as you say, Appellation Contrôlée. And those wines can be produced anywhere within the Bordeaux region.
They tend to be Merlot dominated, though, just because it's a high volume wines that are reasonably cheap and accessible. So they want soft, easy drinking styles of wine, which is Merlot. And then you want to ripen as many grapes as you can. So you can't ripen those tricky grapes to ripen like Cabernet Sauvignon because you want really high yields and you'll never get them ripen a high yield. So they tend to be more Merlot dominated.
They do, because it is easier, as you say, to ripen as in a region as a whole.
Yeah. Okay. And then if you want to go up the thing, you can go to Bordeaux Supérieur.
So Bordeaux Supérieur, or Bordeaux Sup, as it's known those in the know in the region like to call it, they've got slightly stricter rules on yield. That means that the vines are not producing quite so many grapes. And also those grapes tend to be from a slightly higher quality area, and that can be shown by the slightly higher alcohol. So if those grapes have been able to ripen a little bit better because they're in a slightly better region for ripening, you're naturally, as a byproduct of that alcoholic fermentation, going to get a slightly higher alcohol content in the resulting wine.
Hopefully the yield will give you two things. First of all, hopefully it might give you a little bit more concentration. And if you're restricting yield, you might find the leaves that you've got can ripen the grapes a little bit more and get that higher alcohol. To be fair, I can't taste the difference. I don't know. Can you?
No. I'm going to be honest with you. No, I'd have to really concentrate, I think, if I was to be sure that I could tell the difference.
Yeah. Okay. So that's sort of the entry level there. You've got different appellations in the rules. So we talked about Côte de Bordeaux last week, which has its own appellation, which is made up of different subregions. But then you start getting into things like in the Médoc. The Médoc's got quite a number. They could be Bordeaux, they could be Bordeaux Supérieur or Bordeaux Sup. But also you've got Cru Bourgeois,
yes,
which I think is actually the really sweet spot in Bordeaux.
I agree. So for those who don't know, or those who want to drink a bit more Bordeaux, or who want to explore a bit more about Bordeaux, but don't want to just come in either at the top or at the bottom level, the Cru Bourgeois, or the Cru Bourgeoisie, as it's derived from, is a great area of the wine hierarchy to look at. So the Cru Bourgeois, it's named because I think if anyone knows about the name, the bourgeoisie, the middle classes of the French. So this is a grouping of wines which are really in that middle ranking, the upper middle classes of the wine ranking. And these are really where good value and good quality can be found.
And the wines age as well. I've had older Cru Bourgeois which have aged, and you get those primary, secondary, tertiary flavours. You've got some Cabernet Sauvignon there, a bit of cedary, oak. So you're getting the sort of top-end Bordeaux experience, maybe not the concentration, maybe not the longevity that the top-end can do, but you're getting that experience at a much lower price point. You know, you can get a good Cru Bourgeois for 20 quid.
Oh, yeah, 20 quid or under, absolutely. Cru Bourgeois is brilliant for that. And you're absolutely right about the aging, Chris. So Cru Bourgeois, they're very approachable also in their youth, so you don't have to wait decades. So there's that. Secondly, some of the better Cru Bourgeois can age for 10 years or more. I don't know about you, Chris, go to the Cru Bourgeois tastings, which I'm lucky enough to get invited to in London. And there you've either got the most recent production, the most recent Cru Bourgeois that's been released, but always you've got wines from 5 or 10 years just peppered around the room. And you can really see how those wines, as you say, evolve, that you've got the primary, secondary and tertiary wines.
Yeah, no, they're great value. I mean, you get into the top end of Bordeaux, the Cru Classé, which is sort of often considered the top end, particularly on the left bank. And those wines can be ridiculously expensive, hundreds, even thousands of pounds a bottle. Whereas I don't have that budget very often.
I think the problem with those wines is, you're right, they are. They're of great quality, not so much in the way of quantity. And most of those wines, we'll never, mere mortals, will get to see or drink occasionally. But yeah, these are quite often out of most people's price range.
So in the left bank, you've got Haute Médoc and you've got Grave, and they both do a Cru Classé. They're slightly different rules and they're slightly different interpretations of what Cru Classé is. But in the Haute Médoc, it's based on what they call it the 1855. You see a lot of people talk about 1855.
Yes. So the 1855 classification, possibly one of the most important wine classifications in the world. A lot of people may not know a lot about wine, but probably have heard of the 1855 classification. This was something that was set up in, guess what, 1855, when Napoleon, not the Napoleon, not Napoleon Bonaparte that we all probably have heard of, but Napoleon, his cousin Napoleon, a lot of Napoleons, he was taking care of wanting to showcase the best that France could produce in the exhibition of Paris. And he asked the best producers within the Bordeaux region to showcase their wines. And those wines were the wines which were considered the highest quality within the region.
No, that's not true. Do you know how they decided it?
On the price.
On the price. It was the most expensive wines.
That was the idea, though. Well, there's the question is, do you think there's an index between quality and price?
Often, but not always.
But yeah, absolutely. Not often, but not always. But yes, it was decided on the higher the price threshold of that wine was obviously that escalated up the rankings. And broadly speaking, they were divided into five growths. The first growth, which was the top of the tree. You've got the second growth, third growth, fourth growth, and fifth growth. I think there was something like 18 chateaux within the fifth growth, but not so many in the first growth, as you can imagine. And so those wines were then showcased at the exhibition of Paris. The most bizarre thing of all is that that classification, some 170 years later, still stands today, doesn't it, Chris?
There's been a couple of minor changes here and there, but generally it stays the same. And even things like the vineyards have changed. Everything's changed, but it's really about brands, because the Chateau owns the classification and they've acquired vineyards, they've sold vineyards, but the classification, unlike Burgundy, you know, if you've got a Grand Cru or Premier Cru region in Burgundy, it's all about the soils. In Bordeaux, it's all about the Chateau. But it's one of those things, you know, if you're making lots of money, because these wines are so expensive, you know, it's like you're making lots of money, therefore you can invest the money, so you make better wines, which means you can charge more. So it's a virtuous circle.
Yeah, it's an upward spiral, as you say. If you're commanding a premium for your wines and getting it, you're also able to reinvest that back into the wines. And so those prices just escalate up and up and up.
But they what's happened is they're quite expensive, you know, hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of pounds a bottle. But if you get down into the fourth and fifth growths, the pricing actually becomes quite reasonable. It's still expensive, 40, 50 quid a bottle sort of thing. But you're starting to get into really nice wines that the difference, if you look at the scores that critics give between the first growth and the fifth growth, sometimes there's very little score difference, you know, a couple of points out of 100, but they might be £500 more expensive. So, you know, don't get bogged down with the very, very top end, because there are really good wines that are less priced that you can access as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Grave, it's got its own Cru Classé, but it's different to the Haute Médoc Cru Classé. All the wines in Grave that are Cru Classé are actually in a sub-region known as Passet-Léon. And Passet-Léon was actually created to include, it was actually the boundaries are created to include all the Cru Classé wines. So all the really best wines from Grave, all the best red wines anyway, and dry white wines come from Passet-Léon.
Yeah, that was only, I think, back in the late 60s, wasn't it? It was demarcated, something like that. It was separated from the wider Grave region in order to kind of differentiate the quality that was available in that area.
Okay, let's talk about Saint-Emilion. They've got an appellation system where they change it every 10 years. There's quite a ladder there in Saint-Emilion. Do you want to give us what the ladder is?
Yes. So starting at the top, we've got Premier Grand Cru Class A, of which there are very few producers. Then slightly below that, it's Premier Grand Cru Class B. And then it just goes Grand Cru Class A.
Grand Cru Class A. And there's a lot of Grand Cru Class A. You think Saint-Emilion and you think, oh, I've got a Grand Cru Class A or Grand Cru Saint-Emilion. It must be really good, but there's an awful lot of Saint-Emilion Grand Cru.
And I think that's where it becomes very confusing for people when they're buying these wines. As soon as they see Saint-Emilion, they think, okay, it's great. And when they see a Grand Cru, anything like that, it's not necessarily an indication of the higher quality. I mean, it is an indication of higher quality, but it's probably not as specific as people often think.
Yeah, it's not as fancy, it depends as some of the other wines where you see Grand Cru on the label or anything like that. And then you got straight Saint-Emilion.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the top end wines, they tend to be on the plateau, the higher end, overlooking it. And then as you go down into the bottom of the escarpment, bottom of the hill, it's quite sandy. And sandy soils tend to give you lighter styles of wines. So these wines aren't always the most concentrated, although there was a movement, although it's starting to peter out now, the old garagist movement.
The garagist, yeah. They're not, yes, that was, smaller producers were producing their own sort of very specific little identity wines. But that was, I think that was quite fashionable a little while ago now. I think that movement, as you say, that garagist movement, the emphasis has kind of moved away a bit.
Yeah, it's weird because they made a big thing about being on the sandy foothills, but using all sorts of tricks to get really concentrated wines with lots of power to them, even though it's quite hard to do where they are. And they built up reputations, and then they started buying these nicer vineyards and more fancier places, and it sort of petered out, as you said. I remember going down there and talking to a few of them years and years ago, and they were really focused on quality, though, at the time. The only appellation that's a little bit weird that we just need to touch on is the Entre de Mer.
Yes.
Because the Entre de Mer, the red wines can go under Bordeaux or Bordeaux Superior if you want, or some parts of it can go under Côte de Bordeaux. However, Entre de Mer, it's a white wine.
Yes, if it says Entre de Mer on the bottle, then it will be a white wine. You cannot label a red wine coming from Entre de Mer, which, as I say, is between the two seas, between the two rivers, before the confluence into the wider estuary. And that is the area where it's the bulk of white wine production. You do get high volume Entre de Mer, but there is some quality production, and we mustn't forget that. It isn't just the white bulk, but yes, Entre de Mer means it's a white wine.
I spent a bit of time in Entre de Mer a few years ago, or quite a few years ago. And one of the things that I discovered was that you can make a white wine called Entre de Mer, but you can also make a white wine called Bordeaux, white Bordeaux. And in some markets, like in Belgium, Entre de Mer is the dominant brand. In some markets, they just sell it as white Bordeaux because it's got a better name recognition. So they can actually make the same wine, almost identical wines, but sell it under two different appellations, depending on what's more appropriate in their market.
And I do think, actually, Chris, we should probably mention here, for those who are interested in not just learning about wines from Bordeaux, but for drinking, that often the white varietals and often the white wines from that region offer the best value for the average consumer. And you can certainly get some very high quality white wines coming out of Entre de Mer if you have a little shop around. And these wines are approachable in youth and really, really much, much easier on the wallet.
Excellent. All right, then. Cheers.